This week on All About Android, we dive deep on Android Q with the man who actually has it. Also, we talk a little bit about trusted web activity. Instant tethering is opening up to a whole host of new devices. Google's new live transcribe and sound amplifier apps. More inbox features, thankfully, and apparently coming to Gmail. Dr. Mario on Android and a whole lot more. All About Android is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by LegalZoom. Take control of all your legal needs for the new year. Visit LegalZoom.com and enter AAA at checkout for special savings. And by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/allaboutandroid. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 406, recorded on Tuesday, February 5th, 2019. Your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Florence Ion.
How's it going, Flo?
Hello, Jason.
What's up?
Not much, Jason.
Okay, good.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm sad. I'm a little sad because Ron is not here today.
Yes, that is sad.
Yeah, Ron could not be with us this evening. He's not away for good or for a break or anything.
He's not.
He just had to take the night off.
Yes.
But
he will be back.
We found not one, but two amazing people to replace Ron with. First, introducing first from the right corner of me. The left, if you're looking at the screen. Russell Ivanovich from Pocket Cast, Shifty Jelly, all those awesome things that you probably use to listen to your podcast.
Thank you for joining us, Russell.
How's it going, Russell?
No, thanks for having me. Who's this Flo person I keep hearing about? She's amazing.
I know. I hear that you guys kind of have a little bit of a podcast history.
We do.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. We do. We have a podcast history.
That would be material, of course.
On the Real AFM
Network. The podcast.
Yes. It's good to have you back, Russell. It's been a while. We really appreciate you taking time out of the future to join us today.
It's true.
It's always a pleasure. If you need any stock tips or anything like that, I'm happy to provide.
Cool. Excellent. Sports Almanac from the future.
World Series wins.
Make some bets and see what happens.
I can tell you exactly what happens in this State of the Union thing. It's all good.
Maybe don't. And then to my left or your right, depending on where you know who you are, if you're me or if you're you, Michelle Rahman from XDA Developers, xda-developers.com. Of course. How you doing, Michelle?
Hey, doing great. Thank you.
It is fantastic
for having
to get
me on.
You back. Absolutely. Been wanting to get you back on for a while, and it really made a lot of sense to get you today because we've been kind of dancing around a lot of your handiwork.
We want you to spill the tea. We want you to spill the tea. Everything you know about Android Q.
Spill the Q.
Spill it.
Spill the Q. All right, but I don't want to rob Victor of his opportunity because it is time, Victor, for the news.
The only thing instantly tethered to this bumper is more Android news.
You got there. Congratulations, Victor. Thank you for joining us. So, Michelle, we gotta talk to you about a few things because the last couple of weeks, you've been posting a whole lot of stuff about a version of Android that doesn't even exist.
Tell
yet.
Us about dark mode.
where to start?
We've got questions, actually. Michelle. It's crazy, first of all, that you have this access, and I respect the fact that you will not tell us how on earth you have this access, but it puts you in a pretty awesome position. You have to imagine a lot of people are kind of wishing they had what you have, which is a very early build of Android Q. Again, questions about like the story behind it, but I'm not going to go there. You've had so much time with this, you're in a perfect place to kind of enlighten us. Like we've read everything that you've written, but what are your thoughts? You've spent close to 3 weeks with this now? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I haven't used Android Q as like a daily driver on the Pixel 3, so like I can't tell you about battery life or memory performance or anything like that. But in terms of like the software features and the enhancements that I've seen so far, it kind of feels like this is a polished version of Android Pie. So if a lot of people have had complaints or bug reports or they noticed issues with Android Pie or they wish it did more, Android Q is basically the definitive version of Android Pie, just call a different flavor of Android.
I mean, could it be like a version update to Pie, or are you certain, like, does it actually come back in the settings as Android Q? Is it listed that way?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely Android Q.
Wow.
It's definitely a new, like, platform update, full update for everything. It's a pretty big update under the hood.
Okay.
So it's a full, it's not just a incremental update. It's a full, new
It's a new dessert.
It's a new dessert, okay.
which you know, questions abound as far as what, you know, that question is concerned. What the heck Q is going to stand for? Maybe we can save that because I'm really curious to know your take on it after having so much time with Android Q. Obviously, from what you've written, permissions is a really big deal here, and I feel like permissions already. Google has spent, you know, with the last few versions kind of honing their permissions craft. In some ways, understanding what Apple has done right around permissions and kind of hopping on that train to make things a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more clear to the user. It really seems like from what you've written about Android Q that clarity is being perfected at this point. Would you agree?
Yeah. So in terms of permissions, they've made a lot of changes exposing like the kind of information that apps have on you in terms of like, so before from Android Marshmallow, which first introduced permission controls all the way to Android Pie, the ability to toggle permissions is kind of just there. There's not really like a nice UI like the digital well-being that has like a dashboard for how often you're using apps and restricting apps based on like the time, like how often you use them. But in Android Q, you now have the ability to like filter the apps by the most permission accesses, how many apps use certain permissions. It gives you the cleared icons for which permissions an app uses, like camera, microphone, location, etc. So it's like a really easy way for users to understand what permissions apps are using on their device. But that's just the dashboard itself. There's so many other changes too in terms of like when you're actually granting an app a permission, it's not just like a tiny little box. It's not like it pretty much takes up like half the screen now, and you have the ability to grant or deny an app a permission, of course. But the biggest change that people are excited about, which sadly so far only applies to the location permission, is the ability to restrict location access only while the app is in use. So that's something that I think has been around in iOS for quite a while, but it's something that people are really excited about to see in Android.
That really feels like a pretty powerful kind of control for a user to have. And it actually makes a lot of sense, too. I feel like some things around permissions can get kind of murky for the average everyday user to really kind of have a good solid sense of what's actually happening when they grant this permission or not or whatever.
It makes
sense to me to say when I'm jumping into an app and it says, do you want to, you know, allow location access for this app for this session or something? That's for me as a user, that makes sense. I would hope that would make sense in the case of other permissions and for other users as well.
I was going to say that it's never been a user-friendly thing. There's always been these great features that have been added to Android, but I always feel like they were really just, hey, if you feel like digging into some settings, you can find it. But I think that's part of the reason so many people maybe don't use Android is because it's not as like obvious the way maybe iOS is in some ways.
Or they're already kind of concerned or scared, maybe scared is the wrong word, but they're already scared going in. Knowing that Android can be so feature like so customizable, yes, but that could also be its downfall for someone that just wants something secure.
It's like an empty Windows PC. It's like an empty Windows desktop. It's just like there's a vast world beyond the documents folder.
Yeah.
Everything. Anyway. But is there anything in Android Q to kind of like indicate that this is a more user-friendly direction, like in addition to permissions?
Well, besides permissions, there's the obvious dark mode that everyone has been wanting to see for years, but Google is taken their time to roll it out. And they've even admitted during a talk that was given to developers that, you know, they've been pushing developers to adopt light themes. And then they realized, oh, wait, dark themes actually can save a pretty significant amount of power. So let's have developers start adding dark themes to their apps too. And then what do you know? In Android Q, they're actually providing the user a toggle to enable a system-wide dark theme. And they're also at the same time pushing developers to update their apps with dark themes that, and they can also optionally have their app listen in on the system-wide toggle so that when the user turns on dark theme, that their app will also turn dark as well. So far on Android Q, the only app that I've seen that does that is the Google Contacts app. None of the other Google apps so far do that. But then again, this is several months away from Google I/O, so they'll probably update that sometime in the future.
And I mean, you have to imagine that if they're putting these controls in there, and that's coinciding with Google spending all of this time, you know, whiteifying their apps, but then also adding in a dark mode component, that toggle would hopefully tie into those other apps the way you're seeing with the Contacts app and do it dynamically. Like, that would be the best of all worlds. Now, we happen to have someone with us, Russell. Your app, Pocket Cast, does have a dark mode as part of it. I'm sure that probably came. You guys have always done a really good job of listening to your users and, you know, taking their suggestions to heart and implementing them. So I have to imagine dark mode came as a request from your user base. Is like a system-wide toggle that then reaches into your app to turn it on there as well? Is that something that you guys as developers of an app that might take advantage of this would want?
Yeah, I think definitely. Like, we've seen something similar for those that run macOS. Mojave, I think, is the release that has a system-wide toggle for dark and light mode. And I think the really interesting thing from a developer point of view is, for most people, I imagine you'd want to turn on that setting at a system level and all your apps would be dark or light.
Right.
But the thing we've noticed, and I reckon will definitely happen on Android as well, is that some people will want to have, you know, all their system stuff dark, but one of their apps light, or all their system stuff's light, but have some of their apps dark. So I hope developers think about that when they implement this, like give people a way to say, yeah, follow the sort of system setting, or no, I sort of want to opt out and I want to, you know, set my own settings.
Right. Mm-hmm. Having the choice. So what else are you seeing in Q? We've got the permissions revamps that are happening, and you posted a few updates about that. So obviously that's a big deal. The system-wide dark mode. I mean, there's the hints of a desktop mode that you wrote about. How fleshed out, like, was that in the developer settings? And that's one of those things that, like, we're still going to be talking about and wondering for the next two versions or what?
Yeah, the desktop mode is still kind of up in the air. I wish I had more information on that. Like, I did discover some more code related to it, but it doesn't tell us anything more than we already know. So I can't really say much more on that. But I have discovered a lot more information on the permissions revamp, which is why I was planning on writing an article tomorrow, pretty lengthy, about everything that we found out about the permissions revamp. Like, a few things that I haven't published in any articles yet. Like, so Google is adding a new category of permissions called roles. And what they do are, they're kind of like default apps, except there's a lot more of them. Like, there's a call companion role. There's a call screener role. There's an auto assistant role. There's a browser role, a messaging role, which kind of sounds redundant because there's already like default apps for browser and messaging. And what I think Google is planning on doing is they're going to open up a whole bunch of roles. And when an app declares a certain permission and has certain components in their app, and the user says, I want this app to have this role, then all the other permissions that are relevant to that role will be automatically granted. So say like you have a gallery app and you want this app to be the gallery, you want it to have the gallery role, then it'll automatically be granted any permission that's relevant to gallery apps, which is like reading and writing the external storage, reading and writing audio files, images, videos, which are actually separate permissions now in Android Q. So now an app just won't have blanket access to the external storage. Now they'll have to request access to read images, read music files, read video files, read the metadata of image files. So they're really like improving privacy in multiple ways.
Hmm. That's fascinating. So roles, and is this going to require a lot of input on the user's part to define these things, or this is really up to the app developers to define those roles?
I think this is more of an app developer thing. I wish I could actually like test it out and try it, but the problem is there's not a single app that is implemented yet because there's no one outside of Google and me who has Android Q yet, so I can't really test it. I had to dig around in like a system app to find out what roles do. But I think that's the direction Google is going to take.
Now Bleak in the chat room is pointing something out that Google often, you know, kind of succumbs to, which is going a little bit further down the rabbit hole than maybe anyone feels comfortable with. In other words, Bleak is saying, like, we need more granular. I'm already getting permission fatigue.
I was thinking that too. Like, oh, great, more stuff than I need.
And what you're talking about with roles kind of reminds me of how I felt when I heard about the notification channels, which was like that. You know, that was that feature where you could kind of group certain notifications in with each other, and it sounded really useful and everything. But when it came down to it, as a user, I almost had notification fatigue to the point to where I just didn't want to have to set all that stuff up, you know, and taking the time to do the work ahead of time. Sure, if you're really ambitious and you want to go for it, it probably doesn't take that much time, but it's yet another thing to have to think about and to manage. And at a certain point, birds are just swirling over your head and you're like, I'm done.
It's all the tweeting that you're angrily doing.
Yes, exactly. So hopefully it's not as fatiguing as that can get often with Google stuff. Anything else around permissions? You said you've made a lot of discoveries since your last write-up.
So one of the bigger permission changes that I noticed is clipboard access.
Oh, right.
So they added a new permission called, read clipboard in background. And so the permission level is signature, which means that only apps that have been signed by the OEM will be able to read the clipboard in the background. So at first I thought, I'm not sure how this will be implemented, and it sounds kind of just what it looks like, you know, that only background apps, only system apps will be able to read the clipboard. Well, after we got the Google Play Store working and I sideloaded a bunch of like clipboard manager apps, I found out that none of them work in Android Q anymore. So I think maybe right now rip clipboard manager apps, but we'll see. Maybe Google will provide an alternative way for these kind of apps. Maybe there'll be a role for them so they can continue working as they do right now. But as it is right now, you can copy and paste to and from any app that you want. But if you have like a clipboard manager app running in the background, it can't pick up what you're copying and pasting anymore, which is good for privacy because a lot of people will just copy and paste like addresses, passwords, credit card information all the time. You know, they don't really think about the fact that an app can have the ability to read the clipboard in the background right now on Android Pie and below. They don't have to tell you at all.
Yep.
You don't get a prompt to grant them that ability. Once you install it, they have that, and they could be monitoring everything you copy and paste for all you know.
Yeah, and when you install an app like that, you think about the utility of, oh man, you know, that'll really come in handy that one time that I copy that single thing that I'm going to need. But then you don't think about the myriad, you know, other times where you're copying something that you wouldn't want to be transferred to somebody else's server potentially or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
And yet it's just kind of happening. This is the confusing technology world that we live in. The world of unintended consequences as relates to technology, it seems like. Face ID, of course, we've talked about that on the show. You've found kind of hints that seem to spell out the fact that Google is implementing something deeper than just what we've seen with Trusted Face. This would be something completely different, right?
Yeah, so there's a lot of strings that I found that clearly point to this being way more secure than the current Trusted Face, which is all just basically taking a picture of your face and comparing it with like a static image. So I don't want people to think that the support for Face ID like hardware in Android Q means that every device that's running Android Q will suddenly have Face ID hardware. Obviously, your device still needs to support it. So right now, the only Android devices that have the kind of hardware we're talking about is the Mate 20 Pro from Huawei and the Xiaomi Mi 8 Explorer Edition. Those are the only two devices right now that have the 3D structured light setup, all the sensors that you need for Face ID, like facial recognition. So what Android Q will do is that right now Huawei and Xiaomi, they had to modify the Android code. They had to implement a whole bunch of stuff to support their own hardware. Whereas in Android Q, the base open source version of Android will make it easier for them to implement. So other OEMs down the line who want to implement this kind of hardware will be able to do it, it'll be supported natively in Android. They'll still have to do the work and implement it. So like with whatever specific hardware they're using, they have to have the right kernel drivers and all that business. But Android Q will make it so that, there'll be a consistent way for developers also to support this kind of hardware for payments, for unlocking apps, etc.
So potentially it gets easier for hardware manufacturers to create more secure Face ID systems. That makes it easier. I guess we'll see. Or maybe they'll just opt for the in-display fingerprint sensor, which seems to be the new fad. And I'm trying to see if we've missed anything. You posted something about dynamic Android.
Mm-hmm.
What is this exactly? Is this going down the wormhole?
Yeah, this is it's a pretty technical topic. So if I were to just summarize it quickly.
Yeah.
So let's say a year down the line, like this is no bearing on anything developers or anyone's going to do right now. But let's say a year down the line, we have the Galaxy S10 or this Galaxy Note 10 on Android Q, and a developer buys it as like his personal device, and they want to test how their app behaves on like stock Android. They want to test how their app would behave, on like a peer build of Android that a Pixel would be running. They have a few options. They could run the Android emulator in Android Studio. They could use a cloud service that basically is just like a live device, but they just access it from the cloud. Or what Google is doing is they're working on a way for developers to basically boot a peer build of Android on their existing device. So basically kind of like dual booting, but they're booting like a peer Android build on top of their existing Android build. And it wouldn't wipe anything. It wouldn't require them to unlock their bootloader. It would just be a system app, and they would just tap a button, and they would hopefully boot into this new version. It would have its own data. You downloaded your own apps onto it. You could test your own apps onto it. That's basically the goal. Like the goal would be for developers to be able to test their apps without having to get another device, basically.
Yeah, that actually sounds incredibly useful, right? Not every developer has have the super deep pockets.
I saw
to
Russell
invest in the
nodding his head.
Yeah, what do you think? Well,
not but the I know they've been making speed improvements, so I don't want to slight anybody. But the emulator is still relatively slow compared to a phone. So a lot of things will run faster on a phone. They'll be easier to test on a phone. Whereas having to launch multiple emulators and steal the memory on the machine that you're developing on, that's painful. So if there's a way emulate like a device that you don't have on a device that you do have, that's a huge win.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I also noticed in chat, Russell, you were chatting with a few folks in there, and you brought up a point that I actually want to ask you about. As Google continues to refine around permissions, and as we kind of see this like snowball getting bigger and bigger and everything, like we just spoke about a few minutes ago, unintended consequences as a result of that, as developers of apps on Android, do you ever have that fear that Google's going to come out with their next version and something critical to, maybe not with a podcasting app or maybe with a podcasting app, I don't know, but Google would come out with a permission that goes counter to some sort of critical use case that you've built your business around, and then you have to then scramble to either fix it or realize that you can't do your app the way people want it because now the permission blocks that. Is that ever a consideration? Is that ever a fear? I'm sure it is for some developers more than others.
Yeah, I think it's on a case-by-case basis. So like you say, we make a podcasting app. A lot of the APIs and permissions that we need are fairly straightforward. It's just player audio and a few other things. But I do know a whole bunch of developers who have really niche sort of interesting apps that they've kind of built on the fringes of Android, and they've been able to build them just because, you know, these permissions and things exist. And I bet they worry. I bet they sit up waiting for Google O, just waiting to see, you know, what the permission models are going to look like. And the majority of the time, I bet they can adapt to the new environment, right? They change the way they ask for permissions. They change a little bit about the way their apps work. But occasionally there's going to be a whole class of, you know, maybe small niche apps that were really useful to some people that just get wiped out because, you know, taking privacy and other things into consideration, like maybe you have some really, really useful app that monitors your clipboard in the background and does something super interesting with it. But maybe that's, you know, outweighed by the 300 other, you know, scammy apps that are just constantly copying your clipboard and uploading it to their servers and selling it to someone. And maybe that's a case where Google has to go, you know what? You know, the dangers kind of outweigh the benefits here, and we're just going to have to, you know, crack down on it. And I think as a user of Android, I don't have a problem with that at all. But I can see some developers who do genuinely make useful apps that aren't sort of nefarious in any ways, sort of looking at that going like, oh, like I'm not going to be able to do this thing that I used to do. And that is a real shame. I think Android does lose something every time we do that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So.
Yeah, and a recent example of that actually is a few months ago, Google made a new requirement for apps submitted to the Google Play Store that they have to have a whitelisted reason to be able to use the SMS for call log permissions. Mm-hmm. And the problem is a lot of call recorder apps, I believe, weren't allowed to use the permission. So what's happening right now is that without the call log permission, even if they record a phone call for you, they can't actually get the phone number for the recording they just made. So you basically just have like a recording that's just like a file name, but it's not like automatically named after whatever call it was received from. So it's basically making the user go in and, you know, like remember to rename the file names on their own. So a lot of like call recorder developers were complaining about that change, and they basically just had to suck it up and like notify their users that we're going to remove this functionality.
Yeah, and that's never an easy place to be as a developer. Like, imagine having to go to user base and say, Google made me do it. Like, it might seem like a strong position, but it's really not. Like, nobody likes that. No one's going to be happy with you if you're like, Google made me remove this. They're like, yeah, I hate you now. Like, they're not going to transfer right. that hate onto Google most of the time, which is a shame. Like, it's not your fault as a developer.
Yeah. The thing that used to work doesn't work anymore, and I want it to work the way it did, but now it doesn't. I don't care who I have to blame. This sucks. I'm going somewhere else.
I'd like to speak to the manager.
Yes, right. Who knows, maybe, you know, as far as those SMS or the call log apps that you were talking about, Michelle, maybe they'll get a role with the new update.
Yeah,
and they'll be able to continue doing what they were doing. Who knows, maybe that's how it flies in there and saves the day. Are we missing anything on Android Q at this point? I mean, I'm sure we're missing a lot, but anything that jumps out at you real quick?
So I mean, I'm my article tomorrow will be focusing on like a huge overview of all the permission changes. And you know, there's some things that I haven't mentioned. They're not really that big. And then there's a lot of miscellaneous, really small like tweaks. I guess I can talk about this now. It's kind of interesting actually. So the stock launcher in Android Q, by default, you can just swipe down anywhere and it'll pull the notification down. And that's totally a new gesture. And what's interesting is that Google actually modified the system UI so that it follows your finger down nicely. So like as you scroll down slowly, it slowly pulls down. If you scroll down quickly, it quickly pulls down. If you use any other launcher like Nova Launcher, for instance, they have a gesture that does that. But since it's basically just one input event, you just scroll down and it's the same speed every time. There's no like dynamic scrolling with it. Android, like Google, is actually building in support for it in the system level. And there's a certain custom ROM developer team that have already basically reverse engineered the code and are adding it to their next software build.
Of course.
Because Android.
Because they've,
That sounds like it's going to be super helpful, though, for all these big phones that are coming out. I mean, we've already had a ton of big phones all this time, but now people are finding that they want a big phone for the actual utility, but they're still finding that it's just very hard to use one-handed. And this would definitely, this would definitely move some big phones.
I could have swore at one point you could do that on any part of the screen, but maybe that was a custom launcher on a different
phone. Yeah, I think
you're
thinking of something custom.
Yeah.
Because I was watching Jason over here trying to
I was like, I swear it does that. I'm like, no, it doesn't. Okay.
All the way from the top.
Got to go from the top. All right. Well, I think what this means for anyone listening or watching is that you need to stay tuned to XDA. Michelle's going to post this, the permissions kind of deep dive on XDA developers tomorrow, it sounds like. And yeah, check in. I'm sure there will be more to come as you dive into this. And before we kind of close this out, I do have to ask both of you, because neither of you have weighed in on this, and this is going to be the question of the day, I think, until we find out the answer. What do you think Q's going to stand for? What can it possibly stand for?
That's
a great question. Really difficult this time. Either of you have a really good guess?
So there's this the first Q article I wrote, I decided to look into desserts that start with Q.
Yeah,
and one of them that I found was a Brazilian dish called quindim. It's like this sweet little donut-shaped dessert made from sugar, egg yolks, and ground coconut. And it looks pretty sweet.
Sounds good.
Maybe it's a possibility, because I don't know very many desserts that start with Q. So I know Google will probably have to pull something out of their hats, and it's probably going to be end up something pretty obscure. So why not quindim?
And if they're pulling something out of their hats and it is obscure, there's going to have to be a story around that too, right? There's going to be education around that, because people are going to be going, what the heck is that? I've never heard of it. Russell, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm on board with that as well. I think they should for once take a dessert that's maybe not sort of American or / Western. You know, go to Brazil, go to India, get like one of their dessert names. And actually, like, here's my pro stock tip. Whatever they pick, get ahead of the game and start growing those things in your farm. So that when, you know, Android Q takes off, you'll be like, I've got a million of these ready to go. Like, let's make some dessert.
All right. So find, you know, what we can do right now, because we don't know what Google's going to pick, is we can find like the top five potentials. Start our farm, grow
and
them all.
If you need to import them, if they're only grown in Brazil or whatever, import them now from Brazil, start stockpiling them. Get ready.
It's going to be hard to do into California.
We'll have to see if we can pull that off and if we can win, whatever that means. Cool. All right. So let's take a break and thank the sponsor, and then we'll get into some other news. We've got a bunch of app news this week. It's a little bit of a different show. Thank you, Michelle, by the way. That's an awesome walkthrough on Q, and we'll be following more. But stick around. You're joining us for the rest of the show. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by LegalZoom. You can make 2019 the year that you secure your family's future, or maybe even start a business. 2019 could be the year that you start your business, finally. And when you do, you'll know that it's pretty easy to get distracted by all the things that happen along the way when you're trying to get things going. Tons of hurdles, tons of things that pop up, problems to be solved. That's why LegalZoom is here to help. With their network of independent attorneys licensed in all 50 states, LegalZoom can help navigate your legal needs with you. From wills and trusts to LLCs, trademarks, contract reviews, and more, LegalZoom is here to help you. They have helped more than 4 million people, just like you, take care of their responsibilities. And the best part is you won't get charged by the hour, since LegalZoom is not a law firm. I've mentioned on the show before, I'm a LegalZoom user. I've used them for years, long before they were ever a sponsor on the TWiT network, to get our will and trust done when we had our daughter back in 2010. And it was super easy, super straightforward, and just incredibly helpful. And that's what it's all about. Don't let the year slip by without making sure your family or your business is taken care of. You can take today to plan for the future. Take that into your hands right now. LegalZoom is here to help, so you can focus on what you do best. Make a difference in your life this year by visiting LegalZoom.com now. And be sure to use code AAA in the referral box at checkout, and you'll get some special savings there. That's LegalZoom.com. Use code AAA for special savings. LegalZoom. Where life meets legal. We don't need to roll a bumper. We've already done the news. We know. We can. Okay, we can. Let's do that.
The thing I think Q stands for is more questions.
Because that's all we have at this point.
There's more Android news. Yeah.
That's all we have at this point.
And also, I think I swapped my Android news bumper things. So.
Oh, okay. All right. You're back on track, though.
I guess. Yeah.
We'll see. Stay tuned to find out if Victor's back on track.
The instant tethered thing should have gone now. So.
Oh, I see. That's okay. That's okay. It was a forecast into the future. Mm-hmm.
Forecasting into what my life has been like for the past couple of months with the Pixelbook, because I have a Pixel and I've been able to make use of this. But now more people can make use of it, which is exciting. So instant tethering for Chromebooks is a thing. And today it is expanding beyond just Pixel phones and the Chrome Pixelbook. The Chromebook, Pixelbook, whatever, you know what I'm talking about. So instant tethering works now with a list of Chromebooks made by Acer, Asus, HP, Dell, Lenovo, Samsung, all the big players that you know. It also works now with phones by Samsung, LG, OnePlus, Motorola, Huawei, HTC. I was going to try and make a Huawei joke, but I decided to just
let it.
But I decided if you heard that little pause, it was because I hesitated. But yes, more devices will be added in the coming months. And I can attest that this is definitely a thing that works out in the wild. Mm-hmm. And
you get your little notifications like, hey, you want to hop onto that Wi-Fi?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have it. So it just does it instantly. And then it just like lets me know.
Right.
Hey, you're tethered.
I never use the instant tethering thing. Does it actually give you a notification when it happens? Does it
say, as like, far as I remember. You're going,
so that you have some sort of notice, because I do know that data can be costly. And if you're tethering to your data plan.
True.
On a desktop class device, you could blow through some data pretty quickly.
This is very true.
Could happen. Anyways.
This is very true. This is why it's also, we'd like to warn those of you who do enable this that charges may apply.
Absolutely.
So, you know, because Chromebooks can download a lot more faster.
A lot more faster.
A lot more, comma, faster, comma, than.
Than maybe your device. Yeah.
Although I have to say, just this is not related, but also it is kind of related. I was looking at my apps list the other day to delete apps. Like Snapchat is 2.4 gigabytes.
Wait a minute, on what device?
On Android.
On like your smartphone?
Yeah.
What?
It's ridiculous. Why are your apps so big? Stop it.
So the APK itself is that big? Or is it all the associated data like images and stuff?
Oh, that's a good point. I don't know.
I bet you could have foot and mouth disease right now. No, I hey, that just shows how much data you're
receiving. Well, I was thinking all that AR stuff is like, you know.
I mean, that's like the size of like a game on a game console. Man, that would be a pretty small game, actually, on a game console. But still.
still,
it's pretty large. Do either of you use the instant tethering feature? I'm assuming that, well, Michelle, I think we were talking before the show, you are a Pixelbook user. Russ? Well, yeah, Michelle.
Well, actually, I only just got instant tethering because I have an HP Chromebook X2.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So
have you used this new feature then with your HP Chromebook?
No, not yet. No. I mean, they just announced it pretty much, and I mean, it did show up for me since I run Chrome OS Canary, and I deal with the bugs sometimes to get all these features, but I kind of just ignored it because I never really...
You got Android Q to deal with now.
Your life is so full of Q right now.
It's fine.
Your life is full of Q.
There's a lot to dig in over there. Russell, did you ever venture into Chromebook territory?
No, it's kind of one of those things. Like, I'm a developer by trade, and so I have to run things like Xcode and Android Studio. And I know Android Studio kind of half runs on the Chromebook now, which is cool. They got most of it working. But, yeah, I still have to run a MacBook Pro. There's a similar feature on iOS. I think you still have to click the little button, but it automatically connects itself to your phone. And I got to say, I know there's some people out there going like, why can't you just set it up as a quick action? And it's just one button press. It's not that hard. But I got to tell you, when you've got that, and it just does it automatically. It is so good. I love it.
Yeah, you open it at the airport, and then it just like turns on.
Bloop, bloop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have LTE.
And that convenience is really good. And I've got a fairly big data plan as well, so I'm not that bothered if it burns through stuff. As long as it's not, you know, backing up hundreds of gigabytes of something off to whatever, like I'm happy.
Right. Well, and on Project Fi, after you've done like 5 gigs, I think it is, or whatever.
Yeah,
then
5 or 6 gigs.
5 or 6 gigs, then everything beyond
you got
that you aren't charged
six
for.
Gigs, baby.
So you know, if you're having a heavy data month, then once you get to that point, then sure, up, you know, download 200 gigs of whatever. It doesn't matter. it's on Google at that point. They don't charge you for any of those overages at that point anyway.
Nice.
Yeah, it is pretty nice. But I never get up that high except for last month for whatever reason. I don't really know why. But I paid a lot in data on Project Fi last month. It was
New Year's Eve, I bet you.
I guess so. I don't know. I did a lot of navigating. Like, is navigating a high data usage thing? It is? Okay, because yes. I did a lot of navigating. Yes. Went to Tahoe like 3 separate
Especially
weekends.
Especially if you don't have your maps downloaded.
Oh,
which I have all of the Bay Area downloaded.
You're right.
I have all the way from Petaluma to San Jose downloaded for this reason.
And after a certain amount of time, maps will blow it out, and you have to download it again,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
So you have to know. And when you download it, make sure you're on Wi-Fi.
Pro tip.
Got it.
In the zombie apocalypse, we're getting in Flo's car. She's going to have all the maps.
Oh, yeah. I'm also a very fast driver, so you do want to get in my car.
So perfect for the zombie apocalypse until Google blows out the map.
Yes.
And, yeah. Then we're all screwed. So Google first announced trusted web activities at the Chrome Dev Summit in 2017. And now, apparently, the API is officially live. So what is it? Basically, it's going to allow for launching full-screen web content from inside a native app. It means that developers can actually distribute progressive web apps via the Play Store. The API is live in Chrome 72 up to now. You know, the developers have used WebView and custom tabs to kind of integrate that browser experience into apps. But in doing so, you know, you might get some of the UI elements from the Chrome browser integrated as well. And that doesn't look as good. TWA is basically a full screen browser within an app with no browser UI. So that allows, it also actually allows for some expanded features, some Chrome performance and features to be utilized. Things that weren't available in WebView, things like web push notifications, background sync, autofill, sharing API. So more capability for developers to kind of integrate this web experience into their app, you know, with a few more controls. It also actually shares stored data with the Chrome browser. So things like cookies will survive across, so you don't get logged out when you use it from within an app. I don't know. Sounds kind of interesting.
Oh,
I don't know why thinking about a progressive web app suddenly being published into the Play Store gives me pause. Should I be concerned about that, or it's already kind of happening? It's just this makes it happen better. What do you think?
Well, I think people are already basically doing that, right?
Yeah.
So you download a native app, and inside is some kind of wrapper potentially that has a whole bunch of web stuff in it. So this is just a nicer way of doing that. I don't really think it's going to magically ruin the Play Store or anything.
Okay. What do you think, Michelle?
There are already progressive web apps on the Play Store. Google Maps Lite and Twitter Lite, I'm pretty sure, are both progressive web apps. Mm-hmm. But now more developers, more web developers will be able to do it themselves rather than, you know, making a native app. They can just package their progressive web app as an APK and submit it on the Play Store. So it would be a win-win for users and developers.
Yeah.
Less time spent developing and more apps installed for users.
I would also like to see those festival apps, or just like apps for like weekend-only things,
yes,
or like event-only mm-hmm. things going progressive web app, because it's ridiculous. I don't want to download an app to like use it for a weekend. Like, this is ridiculous.
I do that every year.
Like,
with Google
I just
I.O.
want to be able to launch it, honestly, if I could, to just launch it from the Chrome browser on my phone. If I can do that and then just like have it open in its own tab and its own process for the whole weekend, and then when I'm done, I'm done. That's it. I'm done.
Yeah. See you later, Coachella.
Like, well, right. I'm not going to Coachella, but I am going to a thing in the desert.
Oh, okay. And do they have their own app?
And yeah, I had to download an app, and I just thought, like, how annoying. Like, no. I'm trying to, like, KonMari my app drawer, not, like, add more things to it.
Oh, man.
Come on.
Tell
this
me
is
about
2019.
It.
This is the year of tossing out things that don't give you joy, and, like, apps that I have to, like, install do not give me joy.
Yeah. And Google should lead. Google I.O. No app. Just give us a progressive web app. Do it, Google. You know you want to. Nick Butcher and team, if you're listening.
Yeah. And also, also, if you're listening, get in touch with me. You should come on the show. Just saying.
I think you can tweet
him. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've invited him a couple of times. We'll see if it ever happens. Okay. So that's just making it better for both developers and users. And that is good.
You know what else is good? feedback from our listenership.
That is good.
I love feedback from the listenership because it lets us all know that you're out there watching us and we're not actually just doing this to cameras for our own fun in the studio.
Although we kind of are too.
We are doing that too, yes. This one comes from Adam, and this is regarding buttonless phones, which is like a big topic that we had last week. So Adam writes in, I'm just cringing and thinking about the times when you need to restart your device and the screen and voice assistant is non-responsive. And a while ago, we decided to not let you pop out the battery. What option do you have other than just waiting until the battery dies? Who wants to eliminate any option to reset the device?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair consideration. It sounds like Michelle knows the answer.
Yes, I want to hear.
So I'm pretty sure they're referring to the Miso Zero, which just went on Indiegogo, I think.
Yeah. Yep.
So the funny thing about that is I think I read or I heard that there's actually a hole for a hard reset button.
So you just put in a little pin or a little earring.
Yeah. I heard it's not fully holeless as it looks like, but
it's portless, but it's not holeless.
Might be a regulation. I think that it has to have a hard reset button. Maybe,
you know what?
Or maybe it's just something developers did for their own ease of use.
They did that back in the day of the flip phones, and I appreciated it. Like, I think they should bring back the pin, because if they want to give us these bezel-less phones without buttons and, like, buttons embedded into things, like, bring back the little pinhole. I'm fine with it. You know, I have an earring. I can always pop it in there and, like, take care of it whenever I need to, you know?
Yeah.
And let me, like, long press it with a pin so that I could, like, go into boot mode or whatever, or, like...
I appreciate there being a pinhole, but it kind of goes counter to the promise of the device. No, you know, it's a holeless phone.
It's not a button, though. It's not.
It's a button inside that hole.
Then you can't call it a holeless phone
because it
does have a hole.
I mean, it is one, right?
So there's not zero holes. There's 0.0001 holes.
Or maybe large.
Well, no, I was saying it's the size of holeless. Or the 0.05 millimeter, you know, the little pencil lead.
Oh, so this, you know, they're over promising here and they're under delivering. That's all I'm saying. But you would want something like that, because it would really suck if you got one of those phones and there truly was no way to reset your phone if it got all those.
I do think it speaks to like society and what like we actually want from tech and what people call innovative, because those of us who really love gadget porn, we love to see this sort of thing happen, but there's also a giant spectrum of people out there that are just like, I just need you to make it like easy for me to use. I don't like removing things. This is getting too much for me.
The bells and whistles don't care. I just want my phone to work. Does it make a call? Great. That's what I wanted to
do. Does it take the best pictures in the world? Awesome.
Yeah.
This is why we keep losing people to the iPhone.
But I mean, it's not just Meizu. It is also, we talked about the Vivo Apex 2019.
All the other, it's so a hot new thing in Chinese handset manufacturing.
This thing could be a trend.
And, oh, it is going to be a trend. I just wait till Shaw gets back from MWC.
Yeah, are you going to MWC this year?
We'll have someone. We'll have Adam, who's based in Ireland, going to MWC this time.
All right.
Just wait till everybody gets back from MWC. It's gonna be
all
buttonless,
all holeless phones. Todd Parker wrote in to say, I just finished listening to episode 405. Couldn't wait to write to you and tell you how much I agree with Flo's distaste of touchscreens in cars. I'm a serious car buff, spent more than my fair share buying, repairing, and restoring cars of all types. I refuse to partake in the touchscreen madness. It is the most boneheaded thing to come out of the auto industry lately. Ron summed it up perfectly when he said they were in such a hurry to develop the technology, they didn't stop and ask if they should. Recently... Of course, that's a quote, but anyways. Recently, I had to rent a car last week during the nasty polar vortex we had in Indiana. Temperatures dropped to well below zero, and the car I rented had a touchscreen infotainment system. Not only was the LCD screen completely frozen when I climbed into the car, rendering it useless, but I couldn't use it at all wearing gloves once it started responding after warming the car for over 10 minutes. All told, most all of the car's functionality was crippled or disabled due to the cold temperatures, and this is unacceptable. Let's just say I will never buy a car with a touchscreen interface. And I think I gathered that from your response. What do you guys think? Where do you stand on the touchscreens and cars, the big panels? Flo is very, very much against it. But Russell, do you, you know, in your Tesla, do you have a big touchscreen interface? I don't actually know that you have a Tesla.
That statement is. But yes, so I'm against. I'm half with Flo and Ron, and half on the other side, which is I'm against bad touchscreens. I feel like these are things you can engineer for. Like if you're going to put a touchscreen in a car. You can engineer it to not freeze up when it gets below zero. You can engineer it to work with gloves. You can engineer all this. I'm sure as an engineer, you can engineer all this magical stuff so that you have a touchscreen that works. And then I still want controls for things like, you know, cruise control and volume up and down, because I feel like physical tactile controls, at least on your steering wheel, there's something about them. Like you don't have to look at them. You don't have to try and magically figure out where on this giant touchscreen there's a button. Like there are some things that just should remain buttons, but I'm not completely against the touchscreen. Like I've seen the giant one in the Tesla Model S. I'm a huge fan. If that does all my navigation and stuff and it's reliable and I still get some buttons to play with, I'm sold. Like give me the best of both worlds.
Find basically. A middle ground.
Yeah, best of both worlds. I like that. What do you think, Michelle?
Yeah, don't you live in a driving state?
Yeah, everyone drives in Texas. So what I don't like about infotainment systems is when they have a whole bunch of non-standard like apps or systems to use.
Yeah,
I wish everyone got on board with either Apple CarPlay or Android Auto.
Seriously.
Yeah. You want everything to work as you expect it. You don't want to deal with things that don't connect to your existing services or they're super outdated and they don't work anymore.
Some of us can't drive without our space music because the space music helps us so that we are relaxed when we drive and that we're not driving like speed demons. I'm talking about myself.
True that. What is space music?
It's like ambient, like it's like music that, exactly.
Wow.
And it's super, it's like very, when you're driving in California with all that scenery, it's very,
okay.
It's nice. But anyway.
I feel you. Let's take a break. You can listen to some space music over the top of this and it'll enhance the ad read. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Certainly, you've heard all the news, recent news about security breaches. You're wondering how you can protect yourself. It's hard not to worry about where your data might go, where my data is going. Making an online purchase, even accessing your email, could potentially put your private information at risk. You are being tracked. We all know this by now, by social media sites, marketing companies, even your mobile or internet provider is tracking. So not only can they record your browsing history, but they often sell it to other corporations who may want to profit off of your information. That's why I've decided to take my privacy back by using ExpressVPN. I love it. I use it. It's fantastic. It has an easy to use app that runs seamlessly in the background of your computer, or you can install the app on your phone and it integrates in Android really nicely, or your tablet. It turns on with a single click. And once you do that, it secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. So that allows you to safely surf on public Wi-Fi without being snooped on or having your personal data stolen. It's rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar. It comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and costs less than $7 a month. If you don't want to hand over your online history to your internet provider or data resellers, ExpressVPN is the answer. So you can protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package at expressvpn.com/allaboutandroid. That's expressvpn.com/allaboutandroid. You'll get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/allaboutandroid and you can learn more. And we thank ExpressVPN for their support of this show. And we don't have a hardware block this week. So instead, we're going to give you this. An app block.
It's kind of what space music sounds like.
Oh, this is space music.
Well, no, this could be considered. Okay. It's just what it's just ambient. That. Like,
yeah, I could see myself driving to that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Speaking of audio and driving to things blaring in the background, this is actually something that's maybe now. Google introduced 2 new sort of audio-based accessibility-focused apps, but I could see myself using these for my job. Mm. So the first thing is Live Transcribe. Now, this is an app for real-time captioning of real-world speech using the mic. It also enables two-way conversation via keyboard entry, which is just super awesome. It also includes support for external mics that might provide better accuracy. And you can sign up for the beta if you're interesting.
It's okay.
I'm losing my English. This could be huge just for like grabbing audio, mm-hmm. just for quickly transcribing audio and then maybe going back and like fixing it. Like I could find that to be super helpful.
Yeah. Kind of surprising that it took this long, because I feel like you see this every time you do like a voice query, you know, in Assistant, it gives you kind of what you're saying.
How much do
right
you
there as you're talking.
Guys think that this is related to what we're going to see in Google Podcasts?
Oh, I hadn't thought about
because that. Because we're essentially training a machine to understand speech as it's spoken, and that's what's happening on the podcasts and what Google's like trying to bring that.
Well, Google's been doing that kind of learning for years, too.
Yes, but now we have a product that we know that there's going to be something. And whenever I see these things, I'm like, oh, this is going to be great for accessibility and people like me who could like use it for their jobs, for other things. But what else is...
What is the implication?
I'm looking to Russell because Russell's on with the podcast app.
Okay, so Russell then Michelle.
As product director of Google Podcasts, what I can definitively say is, in all seriousness, I think that there are many uses for this, right? There's the accessibility angle, which is, you might not be able to hear someone, so you can just see the transcript as they're speaking, super useful. And then there's the search angle, right? Is you have a podcast like this one, it's an hour and a bit long, and you want to know, what's that thing that Flo said right there in the middle? Can I find it? And if you can speech to text all of that, with some accuracy, which is the key part, then you can search it. And that's huge for podcasting. You know, people have always wanted the ability to not just search what we write in the show notes, but actually search through what the authors have said. I got to say, this is a weird tangent, but having been on quite a few podcasts in the past, I find that a little bit scary that someone could dig up something I said 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Whereas previously they couldn't, right? They had to go through every single episode. They're like, I'm convinced Russell said this thing, and I can just be like, never said it. Sorry, never happened. And they have no way to figure that out. So that is slightly scary, but I think overall it's a huge benefit.
Oh, man.
But the key part is getting that accuracy, because I think at the moment all the systems I've seen are about 95-96% accurate, which might sound really good to you, but when you actually read the transcripts and see how many really important words they get wrong, you're like, yeah, not quite there yet. But I'm sure they'll get there.
Yeah, they're way closer now than they ever have. And what you just said just sent shivers down my spine. Purely on a podcast I recorded.
You have
at
the most
CNET.
Out of all of us here. So
a podcast at CNET called Gadgets. And if anyone ever transcribes that, I'm in a whole heap of trouble. Michelle, what do you think about this? Do you think this technology could overlap in interesting ways?
Oh, yeah. So there's a kind of similar app that I've used for transcribing interviews I've done. It's called Otter.ai. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was on. It's in the arena.
Really. Oh, interesting. Well, yeah, I'm sure you guys have already heard about it, but yeah, I'd like to see what that app would be capable of if they had the same data that Google has, which is probably orders of magnitude greater than whatever, Otter used to train their, machine learning technology. So if we could have something like that to transcribe podcasts, then it'd probably be really, really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
One other little tidbit, or rather one other app that Google launched is called Sound Amplifier. Now, this one uses headphones to listen to and filter/amplify the sounds in your environment. I'm thinking I could use this for really quiet interviews, because sometimes you do need to transcribe that word and you just can't hear it because they just muttered it a little low below their breath. Anyway, this sound amplifier is also uses noise reduction algorithms, helps boost quiet sounds, and it levels down loud sounds. This was actually announced at last year's I/O, and of course, this is also in the Play Store now if you want to try it out.
Yeah, I mean, I have it on here, but I realized I didn't bring headphones, so we're not going to see any of the controls. But it actually embeds itself. Well, once it's installed, you really get to the settings through accessibility menu and it's there. And if I had headphones, I'd plug it in and I'm sure I'd get all those controls that it was showing on that app page. But yeah, it really, I mean, from what it sounds like to me, it sounds like it's basically like a pretty solid compressor. So it's, you know, bringing the quiet stuff up, bringing the loud stuff down, making it more even from a sound standpoint, and then, you know, noise reduction on some of the extraneous noise around it. So that could help. On,
I wonder what that is underlying technology for. Yeah. Perhaps perhaps it was extracted for technology that helps assistants hear you in rooms that have loud background noise.
Yeah.
Just, it's like.
In all seriousness, can I just jump in for 3 seconds? Yes. Yeah, I did. I have in the past sat down with some Google engineers who explained how at least some of their teams do this. And it's not far off from what you were saying, Flo. So there'll be a research team that comes up with some crazy, wacky idea, builds a whole bunch of machine learning models, makes it all work. And then what they'll do is they'll take it to the next step, which is they'll shop it around to people inside Google and say, hey, you work on this particular team, the assistant team or the photos team. Is there any interest in us developing this further for you to use it on your team? And if there is, that's how they sort of get their next level of sort of funding and progress. And then eventually it'll end up in a product. So I'm sure that happens. Someone comes up with something, they shop it to a whole bunch of teams and they say, hey, look, the assistant team really wants this. Let's build it out further.
Yeah.
And then journalists can use it. So that you're quite.
That's the end game. The end game. We're doing this all for the journalists.
Well, y'all should be doing more for us, but anyway.
There's a screenshot that's making the rounds that seems to show how Gmail for Android is actually going to get even more updates that'll bring it closer to inbox functionality. It had better if they're getting rid of my inbox. Anyways, the screenshot actually shows bundles. Alive and well inside of the Gmail app. It shows a tech news bundle and a travel bundle in a different screenshot, I think it alludes to. Anyways, bundles personally has been, there's the right word, my favorite feature of Inbox, like infinitely usable and saves me so much time. And then now I've kind of got myself back to Gmail. I did the go back to Gmail now so that it doesn't hurt later instead of the use inbox until it goes away.
Same.
And then use Gmail when I absolutely have to. I'm realizing now I probably should have just waited because if they're going to integrate these things and then Gmail, you know, when they get rid of inbox, those features are in Gmail, then I could have still been saving my time by using bundles, which I'm not anymore. But anyways, I hope that they get it.
So many changes.
Yeah. So many changes.
Also changing is, speaking of email, I guess we should say. So remember that Essential had bought Newton last year, totally kind of randomly. But, you know, we were wondering what the heck is going to happen. Well, after it folded last September out of the blue, so Essential bought it after it folded, and then they brought it back. So it's back in the Play Store. The only minor changes, there are very few changes to the app. We are forgetting how to speak today. There are only a few changes to the app. Old Newton logins work just fine, and the new price is $50 per year after a 14-day free trial. Excuse me, same price as before. I didn't use Newton. I think
I didn't use Newton either.
And I know a lot of people used it. And so.
And people are still trying to figure out, like, why Essential.
Because they have to find. They have to find something to do with all that money. I mean, it's Silicon Valley. And, like, in Silicon Valley, you just kind of buy up little things here and there.
So.
And that's how you build your little.
That's true.
Family of products, and then you create them into an ecosystem, and then people go, oh, that's why you bought all those things 12 years ago.
So Essential's working on its ecosystem right now.
Sure. Maybe they want to become, this is all complete conjecture. This is all off the top of my head.
Hey, this is a podcast. This is what we do here.
It's true, but I'm just like, maybe they're like, oh, we'll buy all these like little helpful things, and then we'll become like the helpful people of Android.
Essential, the helpful people of Android.
The essential apps of Android. The essential apps.
All right. Do either of you have a different theory as far as why Essential would care about the Newton email client?
I have no idea what Essential is doing.
Essential know what Essential is doing?
It's a complete mystery to me.
Yeah.
Maybe building phones was hard, and they're like, you know, what's easier? Building mail apps that already exist.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
And that we're right for
the picking. Although they have. In the past, they've talked about all their smart assistant stuff that they hope to do, right?
Yeah.
If they actually get there in the end, then maybe this is part of that. I don't know. It's a stretch.
Yeah. I mean, what a sad sequence of events for them to have their coming out party. Here's the phone. And oh, by the way, we're also working on the smart home assistant. And then a year later to basically announce that, oh, yeah, that's right. That's not going to happen. It's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
Maybe, who knows? Maybe they come out the other end and they finally introduce it. But I think they've missed that wave at this point. Maybe that wave was never there to begin with. Nintendo is planning on bringing Dr. Mario to Android. Do we have any Dr. Mario fans? Did you ever play that?
I found out when I was playing it on the Nintendo Switch that it's a game that my dad used to play after I... My dad used to play Dr. Mario after I'd go to sleep when I was a kid. And I didn't know that we had... I didn't know that he was renting games back then. And so this is how I found out recently that when I was a kid, he was renting games for the Nintendo.
And because I put it on
the Switch at Thanksgiving and he said, oh, I used to play this game after you'd go to bed.
You're like, wait a minute.
I was like, what?
I might have liked a little Dr. Mario fun too.
Yeah, because I didn't know. I never played it. I didn't know how to play it. So he would run games and
So have you ever played it now?
Now I've played it. It's a lot harder than Tetris, I have to say.
Well, yeah. It was a good game. I don't know. I thought it was good. Anyways, it's coming to Android. 60 countries, including U.S. and Japan. They're collaborating with Line, or the creators of many things, but of
popular
note,
messaging app.
Some game that they created with Disney.
Mm-hmm. You know, they have real life prizes for that game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like what kind of prizes?
Like little Disney.
Oh,
like
the little some characters.
Yeah, and you
stuff.
Can go to the arcades and get them, and then unlock stuff. It's wild what they're doing with all this marketing.
Do you think Dr. Mario is going to get microtransactioned to death? Kind of seems.
Oh yeah.
Probable.
Nintendo has seen where the money is at.
Yeah.
If you look at some of their other mobile games, they make absurd amounts of money.
Ask me how much I spend on Pocket Camp, on Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, please.
How much do you spend on Animal Crossing Pocket Camp?
I'm really embarrassed. I don't want to say.
Oh, but you just told us to ask you.
It's awful, but if I'm having like a bad day, I'll be like, you know what? $1 will buy me Leaf tickets, and then I could get that like... And I could get a cookie.
That's how it starts.
And then you just keep going and going and going. And then you're well, I'm an adult. I make money.
Yes, but think of the children that don't make the money.
I know. And then I'm...
Nah. Hey, you've got the money to spend on
But it's just like every time it's like...
Exist. It's okay.
Darn it, Nintendo. Like, this is what I said I'd never become. I love this game so much.
Well, that's the thing. When you love the game, then, the value proposition is there, right? Like, it's worth it.
Yeah. The way I think of it is just like, it's before you become a parent. You're like, I shall never let my children touch any screens ever because they're evil. And then you're like, screw it. 6 months in, whatever. Like, right. Keeps them quiet.
Yes. This is the only way that I can actually talk to my spouse without being interrupted.
If you want to spend money on in-game transactions, go for it. Because I used to be all like, I would never spend a cent. It's deceitful. And now I'm like, flow. If it brings me happiness, press that button.
If it sparks joy for you.
Does it spark joy in your life? Get all Marie Kondo on your games and in-app purchases. Why is Marie Kondo suddenly this big thing
because
that everybody's talking
about?
Because
it came out on New Year's Day, and that was the day that everybody was like, oh, I'm hungover after a night of partying, so I'm going to watch how to
clean
my house.
And
literally everyone on Instagram is like now into folding and into like sparking joy. But it's brought on this whole conversation, and actually I think this is very related to our audience. It's brought on a whole conversation about like what else can we apply this philosophy to in our lives? And I mean, I've been personally applying this to my IoT life. Like I'm in the middle right now of a months long project, getting rid of the IoT products in my life that do not spark joy because it's become a rampant, like it's taken over my life. And that's the whole point of like when clutter takes over your life,
especially when the point of it is to simplify your life.
Yeah.
Russell, what were you going to say?
I was just going to ask, Flo, I have this real deep question for you. Do you feel any guilt when you get rid of something like that has an assistant inside it that speaks like with a voice?
Not now, because I am so inundated with them. I'm like, who wants it? It's like when you have, you love cats, you bring them into your home, they're so cute, but there's no way in heck that you can have all those cats in the house. Like that is not... for a lot of people, that's not feasible.
Yeah, not without Claire.
Unless you absolutely 100% devote your life to cats, which I don't. But I like to have a couple of them around, right? So it's kind of the same as like IoT. Like, I love to have the convenience of turning on and off my lights with my voice, but there's way too many assistants in the house. And so now I'm trying to find new owners for the, like, my friends would be like, oh, do you have any? Like, I want to try it out. And so now I'm like, yes. And so please.
So then do you introduce them to each other and you say, all right, assistant, meet.
Yes.
So and so. So meet assistant. She's very nice.
I don't, you know, I you have to thank it. Like, because that's part of the Con Marie method is you have to thank it for what it gave you. And so you have to thank Yeah. So like when you get rid of a piece of clothing, you thank it for. Well, the idea is. Anyway,
I need to look it up, but I just know that I've seen her name come up time and time again, and it's totally a thing right now. I'm like, why is this a thing right now?
Yeah, I'm leaning a lot on this crutch, but you know,
hey, whatever brings joy to your life, that's what it's all about. You know what brings joy to my life each and every week?
Really?
The arena.
Really? Because it brings me pain.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
See, wasn't that joyous? That was a joyous bumper, I thought. bit.ly/AAApoll405 is where you went last week to place your vote for your favorite app.
Thank you.
And
we're figuring out where to send you to every week.
It looks like Calendar Widget by Home Agenda wins with 40,
cool.
Almost 45%.
That's me.
Well, congratulations. Second place. Sorry, I'm doing this from a distance. It looks like Hello Weather was second place at 23%.
That was our guests.
Third place was Flixi. Thank you, Victor.
That was wrong.
My eyesight is really bad right now, apparently, 20%. And then mine was Billboard. I think I'm heading for the same season ender this year at last place. But I thought it was a good app. Anyways, you didn't. 12%. So that means that I go first. Fine. I will go first. I lost. I will go first. Travel with me here. So this game that I'm going to show off is a game called Tiny Bubbles. And I just kind of like
little bubbles.
I just kind of like the kind of visual flow of it. It's a puzzle game. And it does involve bubbles. Let me see if I can turn this up. I turned on that accessibility feature and I might end up regretting it while I do this app walkthrough. Okay, so what is Tiny Bubbles? Tiny Bubbles is a game, a puzzle game where, you know, you can see there's a lot of different levels, a lot of different places that it can go. The map is large, and I have not admittedly played through a whole lot of this, but I played through enough to know that I kind of like the style of the game. I'm just going to pick a simple one to start off with. This one right here. When you go in, it's called Mix and Match, and it says you get this little hint. And it says, mix yellow plus blue to make green. Basically, what you're trying to do is combine four or more bubbles in each puzzle in order to pop them. And there are always different requirements within each level. In this case, there's a yellow bubble in the middle and a blue. And if I mix, and my next play is a blue. If I mix it, it's going to turn it green and it's going to pop. That was really easy, but I ended up passing that and nicely done. Other puzzles are a little bit more complicated. Let's see if I can find one that's maybe a little bit more complicated. Emptiness. So there's a little internal circle that you can kind of see there, a little darker circle in the middle. And I've got these 16 colors. Basically, I want to reduce this entire bubble blob down small enough to fit inside that color with using the 16 colors that I have. So I'm going to put my yellow there. This little fishy's going to like drop little extra bubbles around. I'm going to put my yellow there. I'm going to keep playing through this. Put my blue there. So now I've got two touching there. Yellow. Nope. I'm going to do blue right there. He's going to add he or she. I'm going to add a yellow. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. I'll add that. It's going to pop those. They're going to go away. Everything's going to get closer. And you can start to do these chain reactions where it pops, everything condenses, and then it hits a fourth blue and suddenly that pops as well. That didn't happen that time, though. I wish that it had. So there we go. Things are getting smaller. You can see everything. I'm trying to fit it into that smaller circle here. And it is kind of a slow-moving game, so you've got some nice drifty music as you try and beat this, and I did really well at this earlier, and I'm not doing very good at it right now. So let's see here. So blue, There we go. Let's see if that's going to do it. Is that going to get me inside the circle? It does. Yay. Well done. Took me a while and I only had a couple of plays to spare. But anyways, you do that and every level is different. They each have different requirements. I'm not going to play through this, but basically, you know, I would have four plays here, blue and yellow. And so I would want, if I want to get rid of it all, I don't want to play on those bubbles because it'll pop them. So blue, yellow, and that would make sure that they all pop. So it's called Tiny Bubbles. There is a free version. It's ad supported. And then, of course, you can pay $3.99. That unlocks more worlds. And then it also removes the ads. So Tiny Bubbles, free and $3.99 in-app purchase if you want to remove the ads and take a look at even more of the app. That's it. Tiny Bubbles. That's my pick. All right. Let's see here. So, Michelle, I'll go ahead and show off yours, although yours is really hard to show off because it requires...
Yeah.
A Microsoft computer, but I'll show you what I can, which is very little in the app. But why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about your app pick?
So the app that I picked is something that I installed and used a few months ago. It's called Remote Fingerprint Unlock. So the basic idea is that you have a Windows computer, you have your phone has a fingerprint scanner, your computer does not. You use the fingerprint scanner on your phone to unlock your PC. So it sounds like it's an app for lazy people, and it is. So say you have a PC upstairs and you locked it and you need to unlock it quick, maybe to start a stream something. Rather than getting off the couch and going up and unlocking it, you can just open the app, tap your finger, and unlock your PC. Hmm. So it's pretty straightforward, and this is the only app of its kind that does it. It holds a little special place in my heart because many years ago, I made a script in Tasker. Tasker is an automation app for Android that does basically what this app does, except it was really clunky and it involved like using multiple apps, and it would like send an input to the PC and then paste the password in and then unlock it. This installs itself as a Windows module, so it's like native support. All it does is like there's an app on the Android phone and an app on the PC. The PC app just sits there and does nothing, while the Android app is where you set everything up. So yeah, it's basically it. It's just remotely unlocking your computer from your phone.
Hmm, I like it. And you can, if I had a computer saved, you could actually kind of see all of that listed there and everything. GoPro looks like you can remove the ads. Wake on LAN support, multiple computers and accounts per computer. Unlock widgets.
So yeah, if your PC is in sleep mode and it supports wake on LAN, then you could also have it wake up even if it's not already on, if you use the wake on LAN support. And if you have multiple computers, you can also set them up to, you can choose which computer you want to unlock using it.
Very useful. That's a good utility. It's called Remote Fingerprint Unlock. Free and looks like $1.99 to get the pro version from inside the app. Good pick. I love it. Got some chat room love as well on that, as people that really are looking for it. So remote fingerprint unlock. Russell, I have your app installed. Tell us a little bit about it. I think we talked about this a little bit on the show last year, but it's never been in the arena. So tell us what you like about it.
Yeah, so this is an app called Grasshopper. It comes from a Google sort of experimental area. I think it's called Area 120 or something like that. They have a group of people kind of developing, new and interesting, proof of concepts and sort of example apps and, cool ways to do things. And this is one where I guess it's trying to teach you to code, right? And I'm like one of those people, like if you've ever met someone who's vegetarian or vegan or is into some, really unique thing, they'll do nothing but tell you about it. And I'm a developer, so I'm going to do nothing but tell you about, you should learn to code. So they give you really, it starts off really simple, right? They give you a really simple set of commands where you can be like, oh, I want to draw a box and I want to make the box blue. And it looks like you've already been through this, but if you do the French flag one, Jason, that one's kind of like a really simple example. If you just go next on that screen. It basically tells you, hey, you're going to use the little grasshopper to try and draw a French flag, which is, two rows of blue, two rows of white, and two rows of red. And it's kind of done the first line for you. And it's like, okay, so if you tap in that in the box there, it's like, here's all the tools, you have. You can draw a box and you can choose the color that you want to draw the box. And you're basically just trying to recreate the pattern above. And I guess this is a real sort of simple way to introduce people to programming, because whenever I tell people, you know, I'm a developer, they're like, oh, you must be really smart. You must be really good at maths. But the truth of programming is you don't have to be smart. You don't even have to know maths. Like it's just basically learning like ways to structure things to, you know, use them over and over again to build more and more complex things. And this app does a fairly good sort of job of walking you through those. So, yeah, if you've ever had someone in your life, you know, young or old, who's been interested in learning programming and they've got an Android phone, this is free. You can install it and, you know, they can sort of walk through the various examples, and they get more and more complicated, obviously, as you go. So they try and teach you, you know, bigger and bigger concepts in the programming world.
How many blue boxes will be created with this code? Draw boxes, Bob, RRR. I'm guessing three.
Oh, that's a good question.
No, that would be four. Four. Not quite. Of course, I'm just guessing. I don't actually know. How many blue boxes? Okay, now I just want to know. Two. Every letter inside of the parentheses of the draw boxes function creates a box. For example, draw boxes, Bob, will create a blue box, then an orange box, then another blue box. You'll get it next time. So then the answer was what? Was three? Because there's three letters. Bob, so I feel like I got that right. Am I not right?
I feel like you got that right as well. What's going on here?
Oh, how many blue boxes? I don't know.
Well, Bob is three letters. So there's six total.
But then that's not an option.
Not an option. Wait,
here, really? Let's.
I'm gonna, kids programming is really
I'm just
easy.
Gonna. So it's two, okay? Since there are two of the letter
how
B
many
inside
blue boxes.
The
boxes. There you go. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. We didn't read the question. So this is a classic university thing. You got to read the question.
Oh okay. And the prince. Ugh, two blue boxes. Whatever.
Anyway,
I'm not a coder.
The rest of the app isn't as bad as that. There are some really cool things you can do in here.
It's really cool. No, and I love the approach of it, and it really does make a lot of sense. And you know, there's a little bit of incentive around unlocking achievements and everything. Great place to start. Excellent. And I love your quote. You don't have to be smart to be a coder.
Yeah. Just point yourself at that. If anyone thinks they need to be smart or know maths or whatever, just say, I know this Russell guy. He's an idiot and he knows no maths and he can program sort of. So can you.
It's kind of like a puzzle. Like coding is kind of like a puzzle, right? Mm-hmm. Just putting it all together.
Yeah, definitely.
Very cool stuff. Grasshopper, learn to code for free. All right, Flo, returning winner this week. What you got?
Well, this week, so I've committed myself this year to find apps that work just as well as the Google apps and offer access to that, but aren't made by Google. So I'm trying to basically, I'm challenging myself to find like a replacement for all the apps that I'm used to using directly from Google. And this is just to kind of like get out of my bubble. And also because I realized that, you know, not all Google apps offer everything that I want. So the first thing that I decided to tackle was my Google Drive. Now, this app is not for the full Google Drive. This app is just for the images in my Google Drive. And the reason this is important is because, A, not only am I hauling around a bunch of screenshots and, you know, images that I need to turn in with articles to editors, but I also am a mass collector of memes. And so I need to have those things with me at all times.
Marie Kondo, that stuff.
Well,
which memes give you joy?
Give me joy. So if we come over here, the app that I brought is called Gfolio Google Drive Photo Gallery and Uploader. Now, this thing offers a whole bunch of stuff. All right, now I'm praying that this is safe. Okay, so first of all, I'm going to show you a new thing that I'm getting into because I'm realizing that, like, people just pick up your phone and do stuff on it if they need something from it. And if they know your pattern, which most people in my life know mine, you have to password protect some things. So I've started to use apps that actually password protect. So thank you, Victor, actually, because I do need to put in my code. So I'm going to put in my code right now. Or you can use a fingerprint to unlock it. And now I have a bunch of images here. So it's my Visa application. So, you know, like all the things you need, right? I have my Sailor Moon memes. I have all my screenshots for my articles at Android Police.
You have your know-how IoT.
I have my this is stuff that was shared with me, and so this was shared with me by Anthony, and so now you know I have this beautiful picture of me and Megan, which I'll always like hold dear to my heart. I always have, I have my 90-day fiance memes, which I used to send to my friend. I'm really into, you know, I really tried to make my life memeified.
Joyous.
The other thing that I like about this is, and there's actually a companion app to this called PFolio, and that's for Google Photos, is that it has a really great slideshow functionality. So I think I'm going to do it here from Sailor Moon. So here's like the Sailor Moon folder, right? Let's pretend this is a bunch of pictures. And so all I have to do is hit the plus button and it'll immediately start this slideshow, which is like super easily castable to whatever is whatever you're connected to. I found that like Google Photos and Google, like, first of all, doing stuff from Google Drive to Chromecast is kind of hard. And I kind of like that this enables that ability. I also like that it lets you search through everything. It also does offline sync, just like the Google Drive does. It also lets you take care of uploads, make new folders, show hidden albums. It's also got a bunch of settings. So you can control what your starting folder is when you log in, if maybe there's a folder that you're always defaulting to. You can do forced download, you know, if you need to just like refresh things and, you know, you don't want to wait for your system to do that. You can adjust the display, whether it requires a passcode, whether photos fill the screen, whether they're auto-rotated. You can adjust the brightness by the day they're taken. You can add some gestures like pausing videos on touch. You can use English instead of the default language if that's something that you need.
Force English.
Which I would imagine that for some bilingual folks out there that maybe that's something that they want to use. You can add more accounts if you need to have those synced up. So it's just like for $3, it's just a really nice, you know, way to kind of organize all that stuff that you have going in your Google Drive that maybe you want access to, but you don't want to go digging for. The other reason I sought out this drive is because I use Google Drive a lot to sync work files between my Chromebook and my Pixel phone. Mm-hmm. So just to have this is nice and easy. So GFolio, it's a Google Drive photo gallery and uploader. It also does auto uploads, just like Google Photos. If there are folders on here that you want to have backed up specifically to Google Drive, I find that to be really helpful. I'm just moving my life more into the Google ecosystem so that it's easier for me when I hop computers.
Cool. That is GFolio, one word, the letter G, Folio, $2.99. All right, so
they also have a free version, by the way, if you just want to try it out and don't mind ads.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, there we go. Cool. Twitch.to/AAApoll406 is where you can go to place your vote for your favorite app this week. Is it Tiny Bubbles, Remote Fingerprint Unlock, Grasshopper, or GFolio? And I don't know. I think it looks kind of nice compared to the other one. What is Victor going to pick? Dun, 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 dun. Grasshopper gonna learn gets how to the code. Vote. And the grasshopper in the lead.
Wow. People really want to learn how to code.
Cool. Yeah. People do want to learn how to code. It's true.
Russell's nodding like, yes.
Yes. Excellent.
Excellent.
Well, we need the next generation of coders that I can hire really cheap for my expanding company. So get on to it, kids.
Russell, tell us about your expanding company while we're heading on our way out here. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing right now with Shifty Jelly and
Pocket Cast. Yeah, what are you doing?
So it's Pocket Casts, and more Pocket Casts ever since last year where we teamed up with a whole bunch of people in the US to do bigger and better things. And so at the moment we're expanding. I'm training a whole bunch of people. We got new people on board. We've run out of space in the office. Crazy stuff's happening. But I guess things that people are going to see is there'll be a big version 7 launch on Android coming up very soon. It's currently in open beta. And we're getting really good feedback on that, and we're sort of iterating and doing more stuff. So it's not out of beta yet. We're still listening to you all. We're still making changes, but that's coming out soon. And then we've got a whole bunch more exciting stuff planned for the rest of the year, which we hope you'll really love. We invested a lot of time and resources and my personal blood, sweat, and tears into this thing. So, yeah, we'll see where it goes. 2019 is going to be super exciting for podcasting and Pocket Casts, I guess, in general.
I'm so happy for you, Russell, because it really sounds like, I mean, you guys deserve all of the success. Your app is amazing. I've always loved Pocket Cast. You guys are such nice people and you do really good work.
So I mean, I'm personally like still upset because I just barely talk to you anymore because you're so busy, but it sounds like you're doing some important things
in the world of podcasts.
The world of podcasts.
Thanks, you too. It's so kind. I need you to know as well that we've run out of so much space in our current office that I feel like myself are literally sitting in a hallway. Like on the other side of this monitor, there's a hallway, and I sit in there under the fence, and it's very cold.
Welcome to the world of startups, where you just work wherever they can fit a desk.
You know what that is, Russell? That's success.
Yeah, it is. You've made it when you're sitting in the hallway. It's
hustling.
True.
That's what they say.
Means you got enough funding to last you to the next big winter.
Someday you'll move out of the hallway.
Then you'll be in an open loft with lots of windows and kombucha on tap.
Thank you, Russell. Always great to get you on. We really appreciate your time.
No, thank you.
And Michelle, thank you, man, for taking time as well to join us today.
It's and spilling the to tea. Thank
spilling
you.
Spilling the tea on the queue or something like that.
Yeah, well, it's kind of hard to distill everything that I found into like a single article and still have it be comprehensible by people.
Yeah.
Like the privacy article that I'm writing is already at like 3,000 words and it's still quite a bit of ways from being finished. So look forward to that. There's another article about all the small things I found in Android Q, which is many. There's so much other stuff that I want to talk about, like leaks and stuff, but you'll have to wait and see what we have.
I will be curious to hear.
Give us something to look forward to. You know, you don't want to give us everything at once. You know, you've got to keep us coming back for more.
Tomorrow, hopefully I can get a spec list for the Galaxy Watch Sport.
Mm-hmm.
I have basically a full spec list for that. Mm. And yeah, hopefully I can get that out as well as the Android Q privacy permission change article.
You're busy.
Both tomorrow. Pretty busy, yeah.
Bless you. Stay hydrated. Make sure to eat. Stand up a couple times to stretch. That's what I try to do.
And somewhere, Google is watching, going, "Damn you, Michelle!"
Oh, yeah.
I have to imagine.
I would imagine I'm probably one of the last people they would want to have access to this early build because of how deep I dig into things.
I wanted to ask you earlier about like your process on this because I'm always kind of I'm always very impressed when someone and yours is a primary example of it gets this sort of access. Like I would be the kind of person that'd be like, oh, I got Android Q. Does it look different? No, it doesn't look different. Oh, I guess the permission screen looks a little different. Huh, well, there's not much going on here. You know what I mean? Like, you have the knowledge to be able to dive in deep and find these little things, these little clues, and be able to distill that for everyone.
All the small
things. Did you just go Blink-182 on us?
I actually came up with a Cisco cover in my head for Michelle.
A Cisco? What?
He'd sing the thong song. Anyway.
See, okay. I was with you with Blink 182. I lost you on Cisco.
I'm sorry. Let's move on.
Michelle, thank you for hopping on. Your work tomorrow, just xda-developers.com. I imagine it'll be on the front page, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right on. Cool. Thanks for hopping on tonight. We appreciate your time. And we will have you back
thanks
soon.
Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. And Victor, thank you for pushing the buttons. And speaking on occasion.
Sorry about all the mix-up. I think I'm finally back on track.
Don't be sorry. Embrace your TD skills. You got this. And thanks to Alex for sitting over there. You didn't think I was going to thank him. He looks very surprised right now.
Well, I like to think of Alex as our only audience member sometimes. We're here late. We don't really get an audience, you know, like the other Twitch shows do. Nobody wants to come to, you know, Petaluma this late, which I understand.
Yeah,
stuff
understand.
Is closed.
Good. We can always count on Alex to give us his hand claps.
Thank you. And he blew us kisses.
Let's see here. It's time for our yearly TWIT survey. We want to hear from you. Please let us know how we're doing. We want to know so that we can serve you better. Head over to twit.to/survey19. That's survey19. Go there. There's a number of questions there. We keep it very private. It's really just for us to know if you're liking what we're doing, if there's anything you wish we were doing, if there's something you wish we weren't doing, all that kind of stuff. twit.to/survey19, and we appreciate your time there. That's it for this week. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us emails at AAA@twit.tv. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We are also independently on Twitter. I'm at Jason Howell, and Flo is there as Oh That Flo. Mm-hmm. Arena Apps List, if you want to find all of the apps that we've reviewed in the arena, it's twit.to/AndroidApps. And you can find everything about this show, show notes, past episodes, podcast subscribe links, everything at twit.tv/AAA. There you'll also see that we record every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific, and you can watch that show live as we record it at twit.tv/live. Makes sense, doesn't it? That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye. Bye.